Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Support. Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the area. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Avanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Avanelli spots out. Emerson!
Hello and welcome to the Ball Breakdown Podcast with Johnny, Tom, Matt and our guest for today, a player who's played over 315 appearances in league football across Huddersfield, where he's the club captain in their first season in the Premier League, Stoke and at the Borough. And it's Borough right back, Tommy Smith. Tommy, thanks so much for joining us firstly, but how's the recovery going? You got any more time skills for us? Are you starting to get back to full fitness?
Yeah, first of all, thanks for having me. I really appreciate you having me on. Listen, the injuries, it's been a tough one. It's certainly hit me hard in terms of the time frame of how long I've been out for and how long I'm going to be out for. That's been difficult to sort of adapt to. I think in terms of time frames, I'm not sure the guys and myself really want to put an exact time frame on what time I want to be back, but I'd like to think I've sort of broke the back of it now in terms of the injury. I've done 6 months now. It's coming up to, which is felt like an absolute lifetime. It's been it has been tough, and you know I've been very fortunate in my career that I've not had many injuries. Certainly not any long term ones. This has been, you know, by far and away the hardest part of my career that I've endured. Absolutely. You know, as I said, I've done 6 months. I'm hopeful, very, very hopeful that I will be in and around it come pre-season. But in terms of an exact time frame, I'm still a little bit unsure on that. Just taking it a day as it comes at the minute.
Yeah, like obviously with injuries like this, have you found like you've picked up like any random hobbies to kind of keep yourself occupied?
Well, I've had to do things in a very structured routine, because one thing I do need in my life is routine. And I found it very, very difficult at the start of my injury to get that sort of routine, because I was off my feet. I had crutches. I was in a walking boot. I was driving myself around the bend. I mean, you only have to ask my wife. I was hard to be around. And I know that it was a difficult time for me to sort of gain any sort of routine in my life. I've got my two girls at home, got two daughters at home, which helped me keep sane, really, because they're on the go all the time and, you know, that sort of stuff. So in terms of hobbies, probably not, no. I mean, the biggest thing I could say I had was just being a dad, which was nice. It was something that you don't really get chance to be, really, when you're in the football industry, because of how relentless and how sort of, you know, difficult it is being a footballer in terms of the schedule and the amount of games you have to play. So being a dad for me was obviously nice. I was at home for best part of 2 months, really, because I was so unable to do anything when I first had the injury. So that was obviously nice, being at home and being a full-time dad for them 2 months.
Yeah, like you've said, though, just then, if you don't mind going back to it, but you said like it's been probably the most difficult part of your career. Like, what's it like for someone who's wearing like a footballer who's like had this like long-term injury? Like, why is it becoming so difficult? Is it just because you can't do the thing that you love?
Yeah, but like I've just touched on there about routine. Yes. I think one thing that we have as footballers that we crave, I think if you ask the majority of footballers, they'll probably say the same thing, is structure and routine. You know, I'm 31 now. I've been playing professionally since I was 20. So that's 11 years of sort of, you know, routine, 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 routine. And you get accustomed to it, you know, the ins and outs of it. Listen, I know better than anyone that, you know, we're spoiled as footballers in terms of what we get and how we get it. And everything's sort of laid on a plate for us, whether it be your breakfast or your pre-match meal or the kit that you get, anything like that. You know, we're very lucky to have the job that we have. And we do get spoiled in terms of our routine and our structure. And when we come away from that, like I have done because of this injury, you sort of lose your way a little bit and you're sort of thinking, how do I keep that routine and keep that structure in your life? And that's the bit I found difficult the first couple of months. Slowly, as the time's been going on, I've been getting that back in terms of my rehab and in terms of what I'm doing in the gym and this, that and the other. So I am getting that back a little bit now, which I definitely feel better for.
Okay. I was just going to go on to the next bit, kind of moving away from present day stuff, going back to the start of your career. Getting into academy football and working your way up, how was it you initially got spotted for that? Just to kind of lighten the mood a little bit after all the injury talk.
Yeah, it's quite depressing talking about the injury stuff, isn't it? Yeah, believe you me, it's not nice talking about it. But no, when I first started, I think I always played from a young age locally. I was spotted playing for my local team by Tranmere Rovers. That was probably age 7. I'd done 4 years at Tranmere and again got spotted at 11 by Man City. And I went to Man City's academy from there. And that's where I sort of progressed through the age groups right the way through to being a reserve team player at Man City. This was long before the Man City that everyone's accustomed to now. Platt Lane was where we used to train in Moss Side, the middle of Moss Side. I don't know whether you guys have ever heard of that. Yeah, completely different sort of training ground and football club to the one that everyone sees now. But I loved it at Man City when I was there. The facilities were what I thought was amazing. The training ground, the staff, the players. I just loved everything about the football club then. Didn't really foresee what was going to be the Man City of today, but from the time I was there, I absolutely loved it.
Starting to go through the academy there, how does that kind of affect the social aspects of your life? Because you mentioned earlier about having that set routine. Is that where it's kind of drilled into you, so to speak?
Absolutely, yeah. Listen, I think it's all I've ever known, football. I'm not afraid to say that. Without football, I have no idea what I would be doing or where I would be. It completely takes over your life, but I believe it's definitely for the better. You know, that some of the memories I've got and some of the things that I've achieved and done and been able to do, you know, it's made my life what it is today. It's, you know, I've loved every single minute of it. And again, like I've just said about the routine element of it, you do definitely get that drilled into you at an early age. But I think it's what you need. And I think it's certainly what I've benefited from, having that routine and that sort of structure in my life. Because as I say, I think without it, you never know where you're going to end up. It's definitely, being at Man City for all them years, I've definitely learned, obviously, football skills, but I also learned life skills as well, which have set me up to get to the age I am today and have that sort of them life experiences that I've had from being at Man City at such a young age.
And, you know, getting through the academy and getting your first pro deal, how do you celebrate that when you get to that point?
Do you know what, honestly, I mean, it seems like a lifetime ago now. I don't even think it was a sort of celebration. I think one thing that I always had from my parents, from my mum and dad, was you have to stay sort of humble with it and stay grounded, because I can look back now and say that I've seen over the years so many players who were so good and they just got too ahead of themselves and ended up becoming nothing. And it's one thing that I think my mum and dad were great with. And they sort of always told me to you always have to want more and have to have more. You can't ever be satisfied with what you've got. So whether that be my first YTS contract or my first pro contract or my first big contract at Huddersfield or moving to Stoke, it was always a case of what's next. And that's always sort of stuck with me and been drilled into me from a young age. Whereas, you know, it was never a case of getting a deal and thinking, yes, I've made it now, or I've cracked it, or I've done it. It was always sort of, right, that's been put to bed. Now that's parked up. What's next?
You joined Helsby, I believe, after you were released from City, and you achieved promotion to the West Cheshire League Division 2. What was it like in regards to academy football versus non-league football versus professional football? Right,
that's
the biggest differences. Yeah, well, that's the research.
I couldn't even tell you that, and I played. So what I've done is when I left Man City, so my contract ran to June, as most contracts do, and I left Man City in the January because my idea was that I wanted to leave in January and sort of get a little bit of time before the end of the season where I could go and get match fit, because ultimately I wasn't in a position where I was ready to play. So I left in the January. The January window closed, and for whatever reason, I had a friend, and my dad was connected with Helsby Football Club, and they just said, listen, why don't you come and play for us till the end of the season, keep yourself match fit, and then come pre-season, you're ready to go for wherever you go. And I thought, you know what, that's not for me, that. I don't want to go and play with... You know, some of the pitches, they weren't the best. And I was thinking to myself, I could go and get injured or whatever. And anyway, he convinced me to do it. And I just thought, you know what, I'll go and play. It was down the road. And for 3-4 months, I absolutely loved it. It was like, I mean, I was 21 years of age at the time. No, 20 years of age at the time. And I just loved it. It gave me that feeling of, you know, playing with your mates down the park again, that sort of feeling that I hadn't had for such a long time, because obviously when you're contracted to a football club, you don't get them allowances anymore. You can't really play locally with your mates because you're worried about injuries and this, that, and the other. And I went and played, and I only played about 9 or 10 games. But again, the sort of freedom that I had to play with my mates and knowing that there wasn't like that sort of immediate pressure of, you know, league table and relegation and this and that. And I just sort of played with a freedom. And as I say, absolutely loved it. Really, really loved it. Playing with my friends and afterwards going into the local sort of pub and just having a drink. And it was completely different to that sort of professional, you know, competitive ruthlessness that you experienced of playing week to week.
That's a fantastic story. I love that. I love seeing and hearing the journey of the differences between different levels of football. You did find yourself moving back to the Football League with Huddersfield, and you were promoted to the first team. And you spent 6 years there, including a promotion campaign. You played in the final. I think you played 88 minutes. And I just want to know what that was like for you at Huddersfield, and was that particular period a real highlight of your career?
I think it'd have to be the biggest highlight of my career by an absolute country mile. That season itself was such a special season. I mean, I'd been at Huddersfield, as you touched on there, I'd been at Huddersfield for six, seven years, whatever it was. And when I joined Huddersfield, they just weren't the club that you would ever sort of see being in that category. They just wasn't. You know, I've got no shame in saying that. When I joined Huddersfield, we were very much a team that was sort of bottom half, you know. If you can get into that top half, it'd be seen as a big success. And we had that for a few years. You know, we had a decent team. When I first broke into the team, there was some very good players in that team, but it just wasn't on the level of some of the other teams in the Championship. You know, Huddersfield knew what they were. They were a hard-working team. We had we didn't have the biggest wage bill. We didn't have the biggest transfer budget. But since the manager, David Wagner, come in, the German manager come in, currently he's at Norwich now, he just sort of changed the whole perception of the football club. He tweaked certain things in terms of how he wanted us to be as a club. And that season that he had his first full season in charge was the season we got promoted. And I look back at it now and I just think to myself, the way he done things, he was a genius. He was, honestly. Because at the time when you're living it and you're experiencing it, you don't really look that much into it. You just do it. But looking back at it now, it was absolutely incredible how he put us on the map, if you like. Because not only a club who were fighting relegation, that were a club that were like top 16. Because that season we got promoted, we were really, really good. We were a good side to watch. We won football matches. We won in different ways. And I think come the end of the season, I don't think anyone could really argue with us actually being promoted. I think we spent the majority of that season, I'd say 75% of that season, we spent in the top 3 or 4, if I can remember rightly. So it wasn't by fluke that season. It certainly wasn't by fluke. And then to finish it off at Wembley like we did on a penalty shootout, it's just beyond your wildest dreams. What a day that was. Such a special day.
Yeah, talk to me about that, by the way. Like, what was it like when that penalty went in and you just knew that it was Premier League?
It was such a weird feeling because I had all sorts going on that day. I mean, first of all, I led the team out, which, again, I've got pictures around my house of sort of being leading the team out at Wembley, and you can sort of see I'm walking out and you can see this sort of crowd behind. And again, when you're there on the day, you don't even let it sink in. It's quite crazy, really, to think. I don't really remember a lot from the day because when you're playing, it doesn't matter what stadium you're in or how many people are there. All you're doing is you're just thinking about the game. It's only when you look back now at pictures. I've got pictures in my house of coming out before the game, the pre-match handshake with the referees and all that sort of stuff. And you actually can see behind, obviously, the ground, and it's full. And I look back now and I think, God, how did I not let that sink in at the time? You know? So we had the game, terrible game, ended up 0-0. Really, really poor game for a neutral, honest to God. And I obviously go off injured. So I end up watching the extra time and the penalties on crutches in a moon boot. So all these emotions are going through my head thinking, oh my God, I've not even been able to finish the game. You know, what if this happens? What if that happens? And when we score the winning penalty, I'm sort of on the floor in tears. I can't really run off anywhere because I've got a boot on, I've got crutches on. It was just madness. It was just complete madness. But yeah, what a day. What a day. I wouldn't change it at all because, you know, I think to myself, if I was fit, would I have took a penalty? Could I have missed? Would we have lost? You know, all that sort of stuff. So the way it worked out, even though I got injured, it was fine by me because it was just an unbelievable day.
Do you think you would have took one?
No, so I wouldn't have been in the first five. That's just it was never the case. But So the semi-final before, quick story about the semi-final before, I was actually due to take the next penalty. So Forestieri for Sheffield Wednesday took the penalty. And if he'd have scored, I'd have been next. Thankfully, he obviously missed. So it saved me a penalty, really. So yeah, but again, even in the final, we didn't get past the five penalty takers, so I wouldn't have took one. Thankfully,
not a fan of taking them.
No, I'm not really. Do you know what? In my whole career, I've taken two penalties. I think both of them are in shootouts in cup games. Other than that, I've never taken one.
Not for me. Not for me either. No,
I can't say why.
Me neither.
Isn't it funny? Do you know what I always think as well? I always think to myself, if you had a free shot from 12 yards in a game situation, no one was around you, you'd back yourself every time, wouldn't you?
100%.
As soon as it's putting the ball down on a spot and it's penalty, it's almost like that. Yeah. It just goes out the window and it's madness. I've always thought that.
The pressure just comes from absolutely nowhere, doesn't it?
It's crazy. Oh, it's crazy, yeah.
I missed one in a works game a couple of years ago. It still haunts me.
Do you know what the worst thing is, right? Do you know, before the final, and we'd done it with Middlesbrough last year when we before the semis, because obviously you got to prepare for them. Most penalties I take in training, I feel fine. I've got no problem. And as soon as you get to a game situation, it's almost like you sort of lose your way a little bit. Fair play to the lads who do it, because I tell you what, you know, them penalties at Wembley, I was nervous stood watching them. So fair play to the lads who, I mean, did we miss one or we missed two? I can't remember now off the top of my head, but the lads who come on and they just sticking them in, and even the last one from Chris Schindler was the boy who scored the winning penalty. I tell you what, it takes some bottle, so fair play to them.
I was going to say, like, you just, sorry, Tom, I was going to say, like, you said earlier on, like, you don't really take in, like, the crowd noise. But, like, for penalties and stuff, do you actually start to take that in? Do you know what I mean? Like, I was going to say, do you ever feel like hear the crowd or not?
You must do. Yeah. I don't think you hear them, but I don't know. I don't know what it is. It's such a weird feeling, such a strange feeling having a penalty, honestly. I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the type of person who gets nervous. Like walking out in front of in a playoff final as captain in front of 85, whatever it was, 1,000. I didn't feel nervous doing that. But I reckon if I had a penalty kick in front of 500 people in a pre-season friendly, I'd feel a bit jittery. And it's mad, that, isn't it? I don't know what it is about a penalty. It's crazy, but yeah.
Just want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about when David Wagner came in and the stuff he was able to put together. It actually just brought back some memories of a previous pod that we did. We had Dean Whitehead on, and he was talking about that. And Johnny, you might remember this a bit better than me. It was like a team building exercise. Like, I don't know, was it involving like rafting or
Austria?
Kayak
yeah,
or something?
Sweden. Sorry, no, it was Sweden. So Austria, we used to do Austria every pre-season, but the first pre-season that David had, he took us to Sweden. And again, I'm sure Dean's told you all the details of it. It was horrendous. Honestly, it was horrendous. And I bet if you ask David Wagner to this day, he would say the reason we got promoted was because of that trip. And to be fair to him, he's probably right, because it was 5 days in a Swedish, I want to say desert. It felt like a desert. That's what it was like. We literally went to the middle of this like forest, and we got put in pairs, and we had to go in a kayak around these islands, if you like, in Sweden. So we'd kayak to one island, no phones, no sort of food, no restaurants, no meals, no nothing. We literally had a bucket, and inside the bucket you had a raincoat, you had a water bottle, you had a pair of trainers. It was the bare minimum you can imagine. So we'd get on this kayak, we'd kayak to an island, probably 3-4 hours on a kayak. We'd pitch up on the island, do a tent, stay in the tent overnight, wake up the next morning, back in the kayak, 3 hours to another island. And we'd done this for 5 days. It was horrendous, honestly.
It's only football you kind of do with these type of team building exercises.
I've never known that before. I'll be honest to God, I've never known that before in my entire life. I remember we got on the bus, so we got the plane. We got told to report for a day of pre-season, and it was early. And I'm thinking to myself, that's a bit early, that. But I understood it. It was his first pre-season. I thought, he wants to hit the ground running, no problem. So we get there on pre-season, first day, and we're thinking like it's going to be a bit of testing, you know, like you normally do. You do a bit of testing. And we get there, and the fitness coach said to the fitness coach, what's the score today then? He said, we're getting the train to Manchester Airport. So I'm thinking, right, okay, where are we going? We're going to the airport. Where are we flying to? He said, we're going to Sweden. So I says, all right, okay. He said, I've got my boots. He said, you don't need your boots. So I said, all right, okay. So I'm looking around at the stuff, you know, getting packed by the kit man. So I'm thinking, where's the balls? He said, no, you're not taking any balls. So I'm thinking, what's going on here? So I said, what do we need then? He said, nothing, just bring yourself. Bring myself. So I was like, right, okay. Any clothes? No, you don't need any. Right, okay. So we're getting on this flight thinking, all the stuff must be out there already. Do you know what I mean? It must be.
Sounds very sketchy otherwise.
So we land, everyone's sort of thinking, what's going on here? So we land in Sweden. We get on the bus. And on the bus, the fitness coach comes around and he says, put your phones in this basket. Something like that. Why? He says, you're not going to need them. So I was like, oh, right, okay. I thought like it might have been a night thing. Do you know what I mean? We didn't have our phones for 5 days. That was it. Yeah, literally, no phones for 5 days, honestly. That was the trip.
I hope he told your family. Do you know what I mean? Like, imagine
that was,
like you're
not... Oh, that was... No, so before the trip, you come in at the end of... Maybe the end of the end of the season before or something. You write down contact details next to kin, all this sort of stuff, emergency number. Little did we know that the following pre-season, we were ditching our phones, and that was it. No contact to anyone for 5 days. It was tough, honestly. It was like I'm a celebrity, get me out of here. That was how I can describe it. That what it was like, honestly.
Did it help in terms of like, I don't know, showing the character of some of the players?
This is it, and this is why he done it. It was a team bonding trip, and on the day of the final, we were in the hotel before, and we had a meeting before we left for the hotel, and they recorded. There was a fella who come with us, and he recorded us on this trip. And at the time, you know, when you sort of, you don't even really pay attention, but he recorded us all. And before the final, it was almost like this, what I'm saying about Wagner being sort of genius. He recorded that pre-season, and he showed it to us the day of the game before we played in the final. So we're all sat there in the team meeting, and on the big screen and meeting, he says, right, this is the team today, you know, blah, 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 does the tactics, all this sort of stuff. And then he said, I just want to show you a video. And a 5-minute video comes up on the screen of all the stuff that we've done in Austria, in Sweden. So it's got us doing the kayaking. It's got us building the tents. It's got us eating like fish from the lake, all stuff like that, literally. A flashback of what we've done in Austria. I keep saying Austria, in Sweden. So yeah, it was brilliant. It all just fell into place. And it's almost like it was written, you know, for us to win on penalties in the end because of how the season went.
Obviously, going back to that game, you spoke about having all the photos of like leading the team out, and you know, I mean, that and being made club captain for obviously the return to the Premier League, that must be a source of pride looking back on it.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, after being promoted in the way we did as captain, you almost feel like you've sort of not reached your pinnacle, but you've got to a real high in your career. And then when the manager pulled me pre-season and said, listen, I want you to be the permanent club captain, the first season back in the Premier League and however many years it's been. What a feeling that was. What an unbelievable sense of sort of pride and just everything that you look back at your career and you sort of think, like, you know, all the hard work that you've done and now you've reached this sort of moment. Because listen, it's everyone, I think it's every single player's, you know, dream to play in the Premier League. It certainly was mine when I was a young boy, to always play in the Premier League. So to actually do that and then to be made club captain as well as doing that, unbelievable feeling.
It must have been hard to leave Huddersfield then and go to Stoke. But I think you mentioned earlier you're always kind of looking when you're and being level-headed when you get that contract and thinking what comes next. Did that kind of play a part into it, I guess?
Yeah, so we were very fortunate. We weren't lucky. We fully deserved it. That lucky is the wrong word. We were we'd done well in the first season in the Premier League. We'd done very well. We punched above our weight like you couldn't believe. And we fully deserved to stay up. But that second season was tough. Really, really tough, the second season. We ended up finishing bottom of the league. Didn't get a lot of points. I got injured during that season. I'd done my hamstrings, so I was out for a few months. It was very stop-start season for me personally. When I come back, I didn't get in the team as much as I'd have liked. And towards the end of the season, my contract was, I think I had a year left, if I remember rightly. And I just had the feeling that I wasn't as valuable as I previously was. Wasn't playing every week. You know, the manager had changed. David Wagner had left. A new manager had come in. There was just a bit of uncertainty around the club at the time. And obviously we finished bottom. So there was a little bit of a, I don't know, I just feel like the previous two or three years, the club was on such a high. And it just felt like, to me, it was just sort of on the decline a little bit. I didn't have any intention of leaving. I genuinely didn't. I loved every single minute of being at Huddersfield, and I was happy to stay there. However, Stoke shown a bit of interest. They'd spent a lot of money. It was a club that I knew that were desperate to get back in the Premier League. And when they come in for me, I just couldn't say no. I just couldn't. You know, it ticked a lot of boxes for me in terms of the expectation, in terms of their ambition. It was just a great fit, and one that, again, I don't regret moving in any way, shape or form. I had 3 years there. I think looking back at it now, you say it was a big disappointment in terms of how it went, the 3 years. But again, I certainly don't regret it, and I don't hold any regret from moving.
Any personal highlights from your time at Stoke?
Personal highlights. I mean, listen, I played over 100 games for them. Could you class that as a personal highlight? I think in terms of the 3 years that we were there, I played consistently. I think I'd done all right on the whole. But in terms of team-wise, I think we definitely underachieved. It was such an underachieve. For the group of players that we had and the money that was spent, I think we finished 15th, 16th and 50th. It was somewhere around that position, and for a club the size of Stoke and for the team that we had, I think it was definitely an underachievement, definitely.
Well, obviously things moved up from there and you came to Borough. How was it the move to Borough came about then?
So my time finished at Stoke. It was the summer a couple of years ago now. I finished at Stoke, didn't really have any idea what was next. I was quite happy to leave Stoke and have a few weeks to just sort of let it digest a little bit in terms of what was next. You know, sat down with my wife and my agent and, you know, weighed up what we thought would be a good sort of move, where I see myself. And to be totally honest with you, you know, a few weeks went by and there wasn't much happening. That, in all honesty, there wasn't a lot happening. I had a few offers, ones that weren't really, I wasn't really looking at and thinking, you know, I really fancy that. I had a few offers abroad that I've never been interested in, really. A couple of offers in England. But again, I was sort of umming and ahhing, and there wasn't really anything that I thought, you know what, I really fancy that. And then I had Chris Wilder on the phone. Chris, I've known Chris a long time. He rang me and he just said to me, "Listen, come up and train with us." And I thought, you know what? It's a long way to come to train. I was sort of saying, how's it going to sort of pan out? I'd love to come. I'd love to play for you. Brilliant club, big club. You know, want to help you sort of achieve what you want to achieve, all that sort of stuff. And he just said to me, "Listen, I know what you're about. Come up and train. I'd love to have you around. But you're a voice. You're a leader, and just take it from there." And I did, and I did, and I just thought, you know what? I want to commit to it. I'm going to come up here. I'll spend the pre-season up here, and it just worked out in the end that I got offered the contract. You know, and I'm very thankful for the club and for the manager at the time for allowing me to do that. And it sort of just went from there, really.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. Warbyparker.com/covered.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
What's it like to work under Chris Wilder? Because we had Matt Crooks on a couple of weeks ago, and he was so complimentary of Chris as well. And I think it was during a time as well where it was like Chris was like tipped to move to either to Burnley or to Bournemouth at that time as well. But like, what was it like to work under him?
I got on well with Chris. Very grateful and thankful for the opportunity that he didn't need to bring me to the club. Obviously, like I said, I knew him beforehand, but he didn't need to ring me and bring me in. He didn't need to fight my corner to get a contract. I got a lot of respect for Chris, and I think he's a brilliant, brilliant coach, brilliant manager. It's a shame, obviously, it didn't work out at Middlesbrough. How it did, but I fully believe that he's a great manager, and he was great to me. And I feel like you can only judge people on how they are to you as individuals. And Chris was always good as gold with me. As I say, brought me in. Was constantly sort of in my ear telling me, you know, this and that. And listen, I understood the role that I was brought in to do with Chris. You know, we sat down and had numerous conversations, and he was adamant he wanted me in the door. He knew that I wasn't going to be a first team starter in his eyes. You know, the way he played and the way he set up, it was always going to be sort of Izzy Jones on that sort of position. And he made that clear to me. And I knew that and understood that. It was difficult, I'll be honest with you. I knew I was always going to be sort of competing with Izzy, and he was the first choice, but I found it hard. You know, in the 11 games that he had at the start of that season, I think only played in one of them in a league. And I found it difficult. You know, it's always difficult being on the bench and not being involved in the first team, and always maintain my standards. I've done that because of the respect I have for Chris. And that's just how I am as a person, in terms of always you know, wanting the lads to do well and always being a voice and always sort of trying to drive the team on and help them as best as I can. But it was hard not being involved in the team as much as I'd like, for sure.
Yeah, you talk highly of Chris Wilder. Obviously, he played a big part bringing you in. What was it like after he left so soon? I believe he left in the October. What was it like for you as a player during that time? And did you feel like you had to prove yourself all over again after he left?
So it was difficult when he left because, first and foremost, like I've just said, I wanted to play. I mean, he brought me to the club. He fought my corner to get me into the club. He wanted me at the club. And I feel like I never actually got the chance to play under him. I think, I played one game under Chris. And that was a shame because I always, you know, from the minute he showed an interest in me and bringing me in, you almost feel like you want to sort of repay that sort of, you know, that faith, if you like. So that was a big shame that I didn't play under Chris as more than I did. I mean, little did I know that when Chris left, I was going to end up playing as much as I did for under the new manager. So when you say about trying to impress again, I think that's always the case. I mean, I'm 31 years of age now, and I still feel like I've always got to still impress. I don't think, going back to what I said before, the job's never done. And I certainly don't feel that now. I mean, at some point when I get back fit again now, I'll feel like when I'm training again, I'll still need to impress the manager. That's just who I am as a person and how I sort of, how I deal with things. You know, even though I've played under the manager and, you know, we had a good season last season, I certainly don't think that means that all of a sudden I'm just going to come back into the team and play. Far from it. You know, there's always a job to be done, and make no mistake, when I'm back on the grass, I'll be doing my utmost to impress the manager for sure.
Yeah, you're talking Michael Carrick and how you played almost every minute under him prior to your injury. I mean, we all absolutely love Michael Carrick as fans. We think he's absolutely fantastic. What is it like to work under Michael Carrick? Because he comes across as such a calm, level-headed kind of manager. What is he like to work under?
He's exactly that. I think everything you see from the outside, from you guys watching him probably on the side and listening to him in his press conferences and how he is as a person, he's exactly that. He's been brilliant for me. One thing he's done since he's been at the club is he's sort of given me not a role but not a responsibility, more like he's allowed me to be one of the voices and a leader in the group, and he's always sort of asking questions and bouncing things off, and you know he lets the senior lads be interactive in terms of meetings and stuff like that, and I love that sort of stuff. I sort of feel, you know, that's where I'm at my best when I can be vocal and when I can be myself and sort of, you know, ask questions and this and that and just lean on them, really. And one thing that the manager and certainly Woody, Danksy, Grant, all the staff that they've been great at is they've allowed me to sort of do that and lean on them and ask questions and learn from them. And they're such good people to learn from. You know, all of them really are only fresh out the game. They've all been players in the same position as me, And that's such a good sort of thing to have, and I'm very grateful for the opportunity to be in and around them every day.
Yeah, the first season under Michael Carrick was a really, really successful one, obviously, and a really exciting one for everybody. What would you say is the difference or differences between the Borough team of last season and the Borough team of this season?
I think this season has been different to last season because of a lot of incomings and outgoings. I think last season was a lot more, we were quite consistent last season, I feel, with how we were, whereas this season's been a little bit difficult because of injuries being one. I think the amount of injuries we've had this season has been, it's the most I've ever experienced in a football club, personally. And that plays a big part. I think it's quite easy for people on the outside to look and think, oh, there's a few injuries, but it does hamper you in terms of how you are consistently, in terms of what you're trying to do. You know, different personnel, different shapes, all these things, you've got to take into account that sort of stuff. I think the summer window, there was naturally a lot of people who left because of loans. You know, we sold a few people. So we obviously have to bring people in. So, and that can take time. Things don't just work at the drop of a hat. They just don't, you know, it takes time to, some people can bed in a little bit, take a little bit longer to bed in than others. Some people can hit the ground running straight away. Everyone's different. I mean, I certainly don't think, I look at where we are now as a team and as a squad and where we are in the league and how I look back on this season. And I think this season we've done great. I really do. Considering the injuries we've had, and the lack of probably consistency that we've had in terms of having players available to choose from. You know, it's not easy when you have a player coming into form and playing well, and then all of a sudden he gets injured and he's out for 3 months. It's not easy to deal with that. And I think on the whole, how we've dealt with it, certainly the manager, in terms of galvanising the lads and keeping them upbeat and keeping them sort of resolute throughout the season, I think everyone's done great.
Yeah, I think we all echo that. I think we speak for a lot of Borough fans. We, you know, what we've managed to achieve this season, given all the injuries, has been pretty impressive. And we're all very excited to hopefully see what a fully fit Borough team will be doing next season. But in terms of the next 12 months, obviously 12 months left on your deal, what are your personal ambitions for next season at the club?
Right now, I mean, I don't look too far ahead. In the That's one thing the manager said to me, actually, when I first got injured. A very good bit of advice, actually. I remember he called me a couple of days after I got injured and just said, listen, he said, the best bit of advice I can give you is don't look too far ahead. He said, do small milestones. He said, that way they're a lot more achievable, you know, in terms of your milestones that you're doing. Instead of saying, right, I want to be fit on that day next year or whatever, or I want to, in 7 months, I want to be able to do that. He said, just do a milestone at a time. And to be fair, that's what I've sort of been doing. You know, he was sort of saying, do it every, I don't know, every month you want to be there, every month you want to be there. So from a personal point of view, I just need to get back fit. I need to get back on the grass. I've missed it enormously. The day-to-day runnings of being a player and being on the grass and training and travelling to games and all that sort of stuff. So my immediate ambition and goal is to just get back with the lads and get to a level where I can be considered to play again. Because at the minute, I feel like I've missed that so much.
I've got a few questions now on something you've touched on a couple of times regarding kind of like leadership within the team. Really interested in this subject. And I think we had Matt Crooks on last month or the month before, and I think he mentioned one of the sort of downsides of this season was not having the likes of yourself and Daryl Lenihan on the pitch to kind of help in those moments where you need a little bit of leadership. How important do you believe a kind of core leadership group or, you know, a leader in a football team is on the pitch generally? I know you can kind of still contribute in meetings and stuff, but in that 90 minutes?
So I think... I mean, it's very nice of Crooksy to say that. Is that what you said, is he?
Yeah. At least, so, yeah.
Yeah, he was singing your praises, so. You know. Singing your praises.
No, so, I mean, I look at our squad now and there's a lot of leaders in different ways and that's absolutely fine. Everyone's a leader in their own way. I always think that. I always see that. If it means me being vocal and me being loud and me being that type of person that means I'm a leader, then that's fine, no problem. I look at the captain. Johnny, he is a leader in every way you can imagine. The way he looks after himself, the way he conducts himself, the way he plays on the pitch. But one thing Johnny isn't is he's not a shouter. In that respect, I'm probably polar opposite to Johnny because I shout a lot. I'm in the changing room before the games and I'm shouting. I'm in the changing room at half time and I'm encouraging. I'm at the change full time and I'm whatever it is. I'm just a loud person. That's just how I am. And Dara is very similar to me in that respect. Whereas Johnny is probably not. He leads in other ways, and this is what I'm saying about everyone's a leader in their own way. And I think if you've got a good blend and a good balance of that in a changing room, then that's ultimately where you get your success. I think it's so important to have them type of characters, though. You know, because I've been in changing rooms over the years that haven't had them, and I've also been in changing rooms that have got them in abundance. And I'm again speaking from my own experience. The changing rooms that have had that in abundance have always been the ones that have not necessarily done well in terms of league. I look at Stoke, I go back to Stoke as an example again. So in that changing room at Stoke, we had a lot of leaders who were very vocal. We had some big personalities, but we for whatever reason, it just didn't work. What that was, I don't know, but it certainly helped us in the bad times. When we had them bad times, them leaders in the group, they sort of were the ones that pulled us through. So I certainly think there's definitely a big place for them types of players and characters who like to sort of lead, for sure.
I just want to go back to something you mentioned a bit earlier on as well. You said when Chris Wilder rang you, he kind of said he knows what you're all about in terms of that, you know, being quite vocal and stuff in the dressing room. Kind of how did that develop? I suppose, obviously, it was mentioned to you on that call, but when it comes time to sign in a deal, does he kind of say to you, like, what he expects from you from the season, I suppose?
No, I think again, I was lucky because I knew Chris beforehand, and he knew what I was as a person and how I am and who I am really. So he didn't really have to sell anything to me. He didn't really tell me what he expected from me. I think he sort of knew what he knew what my qualities were in terms of whether that was on the pitch or off the pitch or both or whatever it was. So when I come to sign, he didn't say a lot. He didn't need to say a lot. I knew what he wanted. I knew what I could offer. And that's where it just sort of went from, really. There was no sit down like, you know, I expect you to do this. I want you to do that. I think he sort of knew what I could bring, and he just sort of let me just do what I normally do. Again, I just touch on, I was just unfortunate that I didn't really play as much under him as I would have liked to.
You mentioned earlier you think everyone can be leaders kind of in their own way and not necessarily in the vocal part of it, but, you know, other ways they conduct themselves. You tend to see captains going to kind of more experienced players a lot of the time, but we've had Rav van den Berg and Hayden Hackney both captains at points this season. I suppose, kind of, what do you make of that sort of decision, I suppose, to make them captains? Do they just kind of show it, or has that has the leadership experience kind of developed over the season for them both, I suppose?
Well, again, like I just said before, I think everyone can be a leader in their own right. I mean, one thing I would say about Hayden and Rav is, again, they're not necessarily probably cut from the same cloth as perhaps me and Dara in terms of vocal. You know, they're not. I wouldn't have them down as shouters, but there's nothing wrong with that. They certainly. I don't think you have to be. Again, I would go back to what you said about Johnny there. Johnny's a brilliant, brilliant captain. But he doesn't shout. He's not a shouter. That's just him. So Hayden and Rav, just because they have the armband on, I don't think they need to shout. It's not necessarily something you have to do when you're the captain. I think a lot of time, you know, you lead by example on the pitch. And I certainly think, certainly this year, definitely last year with regards to Hayden, you know, they've both done great this year. I've not played with Hayden as much or Rav this much this year because of my injury, but I know from last season, the way Hayden sort of transitioned from being an academy player to a fully fledged first team player, he's taken it so well. I can't speak highly enough of how well he's done in terms of that transition. It's not easy. It's not easy at all to come from academy to going straight into a first team and playing as much as he did last season. But the way he handled it and his performances that he produced last year, they were absolutely fantastic. And he's a great kid as well. I sit next to him in the changing room. Really, really good lad. I get on really well with him. His feet are very firmly on the ground, but he knows that, you know, the sky's the limit for him because he's a top player.
Yeah, we're going to come to like towards like the close end of the pod. We've got like four or five questions to ask you now. And one of them is around like advice. And you mentioned it a little bit earlier, but from what Mike Carrick was saying to you. And I want to ask, what's the best piece of advice you've had from like either a coach, player, family member, a mate? Just like if for your career?
I wouldn't be able to. There's been that many. I've had that many coaches over my career that have all given me different pieces of advice. Some very, very good, some not so good. But I mean, one thing that probably almost everyone, I'm sure the manager now, when he first come in, will have said the same thing. I'm pretty adamant he did. Is it's a short career, and I think I see that more now that I'm getting a little bit older. That, you know, it doesn't last forever, and I think there's definitely a period in your career. I had it. I think it was probably the season we got promoted where you almost feel like you're invincible. You know, you've reached that sort of level of, you know, the Premier League and everything that it brings, and you feel like you're at the top of your game and that it's just going to last forever. You know, the going to Anfield and the going to the Emirates and all that sort of stuff, and you think, this is like, what an unbelievable feeling this is now, and you feel like it's just, that's it now. You're in this bubble almost of like the Premier League, and then when you get a little bit older, you think, God, that it's gone now. It's happened. And it does make you realise that it is such a short career, and you've got to enjoy the highs when you have them, and you're going to get the lows, and that's just it. And it's part and parcel of the journey and the career. And I think that bit of advice is probably the best that I've had. because it's so true. You know, it is such a short career, and it just goes like that, and you've got to make the most of it.
Yeah, well, my next question is, what's next, Tommy Smith? So, like, obviously, the footballing career, you know, like, it's going to end at some point. But what's going to be next? Are you going to go into, is it, like, management? Is it TV work? You know, is it just completely getting out of the game?
It's such a horrible question, and I get asked it all the time. And
yeah,
I hate answering it because, again, like, it's something that you don't want to think about. It's all I've known is football and playing, and especially with me being injured now, I have had a lot of time to think about it, and I still don't like talking about it. You know, I genuinely thought, I've been sat down with the manager, my wife, my agent, my mum and dad, and sort of, you know, what are you going to do next now? And, da, 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 da. And I'm just like, I don't really want to talk about it. I just want to get fit. I want to get back playing again. But I understand at some point, you know, it's going to come to an end, whenever that is, whether that's in a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, who knows? I don't know. But in terms of what's next, I want to stay in football. Of course I do. I'm doing my coaching badges at the minute. I've done a little bit of TV work recently, which I really enjoyed. Obviously doing this with you guys, love doing all this type of stuff. So who knows? I'm keeping my options open in that respect, but I'd love to stay in football because I just think it just gives so much joy and enjoyment and life to you. And, you know, and I'm very, very grateful and thankful for the opportunities that I've had in football over the last 11 years of my professional career. And, you know, I want that to continue in whatever way, shape or form that is.
Yeah. And like, just from us speaking, I've only spoken about an hour, but like, I just get like the feeling that you'd be such a good coach to work under. Like, I think for me, like, it's like not that vocal leadership. I think like the EQ is amazing. Like, I feel like you would just be such a good coach to work under. I mean, you could be technically horrendous, but I'd still run through a brick wall for you. But you know what I mean?
I'm actually done all right on me coaching badges recently. Yeah.
That, to be fair, I'm not one playing. You've been playing long enough, I hope so. I was going to say, like, last two questions I got for you. One is, what's the most unusual or interesting pre-match ritual or superstition you've ever seen a teammate have? It's a tough one, isn't it?
I'm just trying to think off the top of my head. There's not many. I'm sure, do you know, if I'd sit here and think about it, there probably is some. I mean, we had the German fella at Huddersfield, and I'm not going to name him, and he probably won't ever watch this pod, so he won't even know that I'm talking about him. But if he did listen, he'd know it was him straight away. There's a German fellow, the day before a game, he always used to get in the shower, right, with a, you know, a Bic, you know, a razor.
Yeah.
And he used to Bic his whole body.
What?
Get on that. Everything. Day before a game, yeah.
I have so many questions.
Just used to be in the shower with a Bic. He used to walk in with a shower gel in one hand and a Bic. You know what I mean, don't you? You know the razor?
Yeah, Bic razor. Yeah, yeah, like a
Bic razor.
Two or three blades.
He just used to go over his, I'm talking arms, chest, legs, the full it. He used to Bic his whole body.
It's like a newborn baby.
I don't know whether or not he thought he was like, it made him quicker, more streamlined. But I don't know why.
Aerodynamics.
That's what he used to do, yeah.
Shaved half a second off.
Fuck, well, that was it, yeah. And he didn't get any quicker either. So there you go, there's an unusual one for you.
That is absolutely batshit. I've never heard anything like that, to be honest. Never. A big
German, mate.
I know. Yeah, probably. I mean, that is very odd. When I asked that question, I never ever would have imagined that response.
Well, when you asked it, I was thinking, and I don't even know why it come into my head. I don't even know why. And I bet there's some even probably weirder ones than that if I actually thought about it. But that one just come to my head for some reason. I don't know why.
I mean, you can't forget it, to be honest. Like, it's that random, isn't it? The last question I got for you, and you've alluded to it a little bit, but I was going to ask you, what is your favourite moment in football?
Well, yeah, stating the obvious, that one. I mean, I've got a lot. I'm very, very fortunate to have experienced some of the things that I've experienced. I mean, yeah, going back to that season itself, the one that we got promoted in with Huddersfield was everything. It was like a whirlwind. Everything was just like, we were a good side, and I that was when I played some of my best football that year. You know, I ended up getting a team of the year and goals and assists and all that sort of stuff, and then to be captain, it was just an unbelievable year. So that season on the whole was unbelievable. My Premier League debut away at Palace was an unbelievable moment because we won 3-0. Yeah, staying up, we stayed up that season at Stamford Bridge. We went to Stamford Bridge and we ended up drawing the game. I think with about three or four games to go, we needed a point out of the last few games, and we drew at Stamford Bridge and got and stayed up. That was an unbelievable night. Yeah, so many good moments in my career, and so fortunate to have experienced them. You know, we were obviously unlucky last year with the semi-final. Getting to the playoffs with Middlesbrough in the first season was an unbelievable achievement. You know, there's still every chance that we could potentially do it this year. But listen, the club's in good hands, you know, with the manager and the squad that we've got and what have you. So if it's not going to be this year, I'm sure we'll be looking at next year. And you know, we've got a very, very good group of players, very good group of staff. So, yeah, all things considered, I think we've had a great season. And the only way is up, definitely.
Absolutely. Tommy, thank you so much for joining us today. Honestly, I really appreciate your time as well and taking time up to speak to us. And for the listeners as well, if you like this podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like, and do all the fun stuff. Share the podcast, helps us get found and charted and all that kind of fun stuff. But for right now, this has been the Borough Breakdown podcast, and that was all your Tommy Smith chatter in a pod. Up the Borough.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.